afternoon, church. Thanks, Gordon. Hello, Gordon. Church, I want you to turn to your neighbor and I want you to ask that person, what was the name of the person that you first met when you came to First Light? Can you do that? I'm hearing a lot of Pastor Richards, Pastor Richards. Okay, now ask that neighbor, how did that person make you feel when you first came to First Light? I'm hearing great. Okay, all right. Now, I want to share something with you guys. All right, I'm going to share with you guys who the first person in First Light was that I met, okay? And that is Tracy. And you know Tracy. She's our operations officer, okay? But I actually refer to her as the deceiver. Okay, and why is that? All right, so it's time for me to give you a little bit of a glimpse of what life was like before I came to First Light. And the reason is because once upon a time, I was on the outside. I was viewing this church as something else other than living in it amongst you guys, right? So I want to recall that moment. And in that moment, Tracy and I weren't working as a pastor and operations officer in a church. We were actually colleagues in an accounting firm in West Perth. So I would have been in my first year of working. I would have been about 21 years, just graduated and fresh in the accounting firm. And there was this young, very quiet woman in the firm who I had heard goes to church. And from what I had perceived was that it was a very Asian-looking church, okay? And so over the time, because in our conversations about what you did on the weekend, who you hung around, I could tell by the names of the people that I couldn't understand and interpret. I could tell by the things that they were eating. I could tell by the, little things like that. I could tell. So there was this one point where she had invited me to an event, all right, to go and hang out and have some fun with some friends. Okay? Now, these friends, I said, well, Tracy, it's not one of those things where it's with you and your Asian friends from church, is it? And I think that might have been the only time I've ever witnessed Tracy lie. When she said, no. Okay. So foolish me thinks, right, I'm going to go to this event and I'm going to go for her, but it sounds like a fun event. And it was a thing called laser tag, right? So do you know what laser tag is? When you get these little guns and you point and shoot each other and you get zapped and electrocuted. So I thought this was a good, fun activity. They were doing it. First Light was hosting it up in Joondalup. And I can still remember the day that I drove around in my cool Corolla and I went all by myself to this event. And as I turned the corner, I could just see a sea of about 100 young people with the same colored hair. And I went, Tracy, liar. Deceiver. But actually, she got me to that event, and when I went there, I was greeted by another couple there. Their names were Kay and Naomi. They're very close in my heart as the people who I had met really from this congregation, and I'll describe them as warm. They met me in the car park, and they said, are you okay? Are you, do you know anyone here? And I said, yes. I know a girl named Tracy, do you know? And then, of course, they said, yeah, we know who she is. Of course they were. But that's how I got in. And why is this story important? Because I had a great time playing laser tag with these people. And it was at a time where everything was ripe. It was ripe for me to find a community because I didn't have a community. But God knew that a community would be good for me. And so through this young Tracy at an accounting firm, God had somehow orchestrated for me to be in this moment where I could be amongst other young people, but also young believers, okay? And from there, I made some really good friends from the moment that I met them, and they took me in. People like, their names are Leon and Geraldine, Jeremy Deng, Ivana. These names might be familiar to you or may not mean anything to you. They were people important in my life who God had used to somehow funnel me into a life group. And it was a life group of love. It was a life group of one where they took me in and nurtured me as a young believer who eventually gave himself again to Christ. Why am I telling you this? Because today I want to talk a little bit about life in groups. Okay? In the Bible, we get no direct instruction from, you know, the Lord to meet in small groups. We don't get an instruction from Paul to meet in small groups. So somehow this idea of small groups has just taken off in the church. It's a phenomenon. But it's something that's in the Bible. And I want to take you to two passages here, Acts chapter 20, verse 20, where Paul is reflecting on his ministry among the Ephesian believers. And he says, "You know that I have not hesitated to preach anything that would be helpful to you, but have taught you publicly and from house to house." Okay, so it's this idea of home group church from this kind of passage. And not only that, in Romans chapter 16, verse 5, Paul's greeting a bunch of people that they all know. And he says, "Send my greetings to these people, send my greetings to these people." And he also says, "Greet also the church that meets at their house." So we know that even in Paul's time, people were doing it. God's people, believers were meeting in homes. People were meeting in small groups. So it's no wonder that when I came to a life group in First Light, that this is why they were doing it. This is why they were meeting at someone's mum's house. And then I got to see the customs. I got to see the customs of why we take our shoes off before we enter the house. This is not something that I grew up with, but I got exposed to these kinds of things. And so it's there in life group where you get to experience the warmth of God's people. It's there for me at the time where I got to ask the good questions, and I had people who were able to take those questions and not fear it, not rebuke it, but take them on, all right? Try and unravel it for me. Try to help me as a person that they saw as one of God's people to be. So that was where we could have that intimate time. That's where we could have that time that we could grow together, that we could reveal things together, that time that we could witness God revealing something in each other. And it becomes this treasured time that we can have together. So it's not only that warmth, but it's also this idea, I think Pastor was touching on it last week, on how God's going after these outsiders, right? This idea of how he wants to include these people. You know, in the Gospels, when Jesus, one of the things that he got in trouble for is he's having meals with sinners and tax collectors. He's being with the people who aren't seen as God's people, but he's talking to them. He's revealing things to them. He's healing them. And slowly they are being brought into the kingdom because they're choosing to believe in him. So that's one thing that our church can do in life groups. I want to remind us that in today's age, there are a whole mass of people out there who are desiring for some sort of community. And where God has placed each and one of you is kind of like how Tracy was placed in the accounting firm that I was in. I'm not saying you go out and become liars, okay? All right? Okay? Despite, you know, the grace message, we're not preaching that. Don't deceive. She didn't deceive. I got to say sorry to her for later for this. Sorry, Tracy, if you're listening to this. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that where God has placed every one of us is an opportunity, is a workplace for ministry. There's someone there that you're supposed to be there for. And I'm grateful because I know, having journeyed with Tracy over the subsequent years, I know that it would have been really hard to invite someone to that kind of event, okay? So as much as we want to say, invite your friends to things, bring them along, on the other hand, we do know, right, that it's actually quite a struggle sometimes to actually go out of our way, to put ourselves out there. Yeah, so I want to touch on that as well, which we'll come back later too. But I want to give you two examples of two success stories that we've seen in life group. And I remember there was this time we had this life group. We used to call it C4, all right? A bit of a side story. The whole purpose of that name was because someone in our group had a vision of a dam, and the dam was preventing water from flowing onto the village, right? So we thought that God, and this person actually saw a vision of cracks in the dam. So we as a young cohort of believers thought that it would be a good idea if we planted some C4 in that dam and exploded it so that the water would be released amongst the people and they wouldn't go thirsty again. Is that a good vision? Yeah, all right. That was our vision for our life group. And we called ourselves C4, and it went viral amongst 10 people, okay? All right, so for the next 10 years, no one in the church understood what we were all about, but that was the history of that name. But in that time of this explosiveness, we had a dinner outreach, and the goal was this. The goal was, guys, by the end of the year, we want to host a Christmas dinner for people. But here's the catch. You have to bring someone who's not a believer. Okay? So we did that. So this is good because we were upfront and honest about each other this time. But I've never seen a life group mobilize so well. I've never seen someone like Tim Bauer go, you know what? I work at Joondalup Club Resort, the golfing resort up there. I'm going to organize a room, a function room, and we are going to host a dinner. I've never seen a girl named Y who decorated these invitations, these placeholders with people's names and welcomed them for each of their placeholders, right? And I'd never seen people like Jeremy and Evie go and organize this MC this night to do activities together, to really bring them in, right? But also, I'd never seen these non-believers who I'd never met before sit around the same table and look so awkward, like, what are we all doing here, right? What a heart we had, because we recognized that God did not want to just reach us in the life group. He was there to reach others. And that's one of the cool things about life groups, is you get to do these things. I can't tell you that, to my knowledge, any of those people became believers. I don't know whether you were expecting me to say that. The reason why I bring this up, because we were not a results-based life group. We didn't take a feedback form to go, before you came to this event, were you believing after it? Were you not? No. But I can tell you this, that more than 10 years later, I caught up with the person that I had invited. She was a work colleague at the time. Her name was Nicole, a mother of two, that I wanted to be saved. I wanted her to know the gospel. I wanted her to know Jesus Christ as I came to know him. I caught up with her, and subsequently she didn't become a believer, but I can tell you that she said this. She said, "Jeremy, I still remember that dinner. I still remember your friends, and something about it was so special." See, I don't know in my eyes whether she became a believer. But I can tell you, I know that our life group left a mark in her life. And isn't that what we're called to do? Be salt and light in the earth, right? Salt's very messy. It leaves a mark. Leave that saltiness in someone's life, right? And the other cool story I've got is that when I got to be a life group coordinator for a season, I'm in church, I got to witness one of our life groups, Zion. And oh my goodness, when Paul says, greet also the church that meets at their house, this was Zion, right? Because never before had I seen a life group that conducts life group like a church. Okay, so I'm talking about announcements, worship time, Holy Communion, even a tithing report, because there was a little bank account if anyone wanted to sow and contribute, and they would report on something that they could spend it on. They would hear about the stories shared in church and go, "Hey, I think we can put this money towards this family or these people." We would hear a sermon discussion, but importantly, there were children in this life group. And that was new for me. Because it's here in this life group that we got to hear the children testify and share about the good news that God had done in their life that week. And it might have been, and bear in mind, they're children, they're students, they're Asian students as well. So there were testimonies about how God helped them with a test, how God helped them achieve something, how God had helped them get into something. We hear them where they're at. But what I saw was a church, a family of God, who could include their children in this thing called life, this new life that God had given us. This is in contrast to how I had children of our own, me and Melina, where we went through our kids, and yeah, there's no chance you're going to get our kids coming to life group. One of the reasons is because we sleep trained our kids, all right? It's a little bit controversial, but yeah, they had a time that they needed to go to bed, all right? And that was 7:30. Life groups normally start at 7:30. But now, last year, we got to witness a momentous change. Our kids are now old enough to attend our life group, right? And that has changed the whole dynamic again, all right? So what I could see in Zion's life group was something that I benefited from, because this was a group of believers that had gone before me. Now, I didn't have kids their age. They didn't do life group the way that I was used to, but I could witness the way that they're doing it. And years later, I reaped the rewards, because we're doing the exact same thing that they were doing just 5 years ago. We're basically running a mini kids church. It's going to grow into a mini kids church on a Friday. Melina, just giving you the heads up. Yeah. But life groups aren't always happy days, and that's one of the benefits of it. There are challenges when you do life in small groups. And one of those challenges that I particularly came across, which I'm still challenged today, if I'm being honest, is culture and language, okay? Over the past few years, we've had really good chats with our kids, Oliver and Jonah. And, you know, whilst I mentioned before to you that it seems really odd for me to come and witness a lot of people with the same coloured hair, that's only because I was born here and I was growing up in Perth, or raised in Perth, and I'm so used to being the minority in a community. And with that comes issues, right? And so when I see this other group, it's hard for me to connect with this group. But I'm thankful for First Light because I'm able to go cross-culture. You know, I'm able to actually be amongst the culture that I had perhaps avoided and resented growing up here. But also, part of the cost of growing up in Perth like this is that there's this issue of Asianness. There's this issue of racism, right? And sad to say, seems like the curse has continued on to the next generation. Because we found out that our youngest boy, Jonah, had a problem with another kid at school. And he was only 5 years old. And the issue was, this other kid at school spoke funny. And I said, well, okay, well, can you just include him? Can you play with him some more? Give him a chance. No, we don't understand what he's saying. Okay, found out who the boy was. Turns out this boy is from China. And so we asked Jonah. We said, Jonah, are you Chinese? And what do you think he said? He said, no, I'm Australian. And that's when I went, what the hell, Jonah? Because it really hit the ceiling because I went, I've got that kid. I've got that racist kid. And he doesn't know what's Chinese and what's not. And so we as parents, me and Mel, have somewhat failed our children. And so we've had to have a chat with them about what it means to be Australian. What it means to be Chinese. We're technically not Chinese, or are we? I can't remember. Anyway, I've started to have to work on a whole matrix and flow chart of how this works, because if my kids get asked this question, where are you from? What nationality are you? You know, where are your parents from? What are you? They have to go, was it a Chinese person asking them? Was it a person with Caucasian skin, you know, was it on a form that you were being asked, you know, in what context were you being asked this question will dictate which answer you give and how you present it. So yes, my son is not racist, he's just slightly racist. There are cultural and language barriers that we find ourselves in. Okay, and even if I'm being honest, in the last couple of years, I've really got to notice the differences between the cultures. I've now had, you'll be proud of me, I've had the chat with Ollie to say Asian is a broad term, Ollie, okay? But there's many types of Asian, okay? Singaporean Asian, there's Malaysian Asian, yeah. And within those countries, there's also different types of Asianness all in there. Right? So be careful how you use that word. This is a good thing because we get to work this out. God needs to work this out. Okay? There is no better place than in a church, a group of people, God's people, where people are together when they really shouldn't be together. There really shouldn't be any other reason why we should be together, but it's for God. It's because Jesus is bringing us together. He's going cross-culture. He's giving us the Holy Spirit to understand our dialects, our tones, our sarcasm. Believe me, my mum knows. She's still trying to understand if I'm being serious or not, right? So that's one of the challenges that we face in our life group. But the other challenge is about longevity. Okay, so longevity with each other. You know when you've been in a relationship for a bit too long and you start to think that you know each other all too well? What happens is you start making assumptions about each other, okay? And then that's when you get yourself in trouble. Because when you make assumptions, you make an ass out of you and me. That's how it works, right? This is not necessarily a you problem. This is a problem with humans. And Hebrews speaks about this. In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7 to 8, Paul is writing to a group of believers. And these are believers who he's saying to them, don't go back to the old ways. Continue in the faith. And he says this, "So, as the Holy Spirit says today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts, as you did in the rebellion during the time of testing in the wilderness." So this idea of hardening your hearts, right, and this time of testing in the wilderness, we have to go back into the Old Testament to find out what this is all about. So in Psalm 95, verse 7 to 8, it says this, "Today, if only you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, as you did that day at Massah in the wilderness." Okay? So now we have a time and a place of when this hardening of hearts came to be. And it's there where we need to go to Exodus chapter 17. And I'm going to read it out to you. It's a little bit long, so bear with me. Just hear it. What I want you to hear is that the hardening of hearts has to do with people spending so much time with each other that they never change. So when someone becomes hard of heart, there's someone that you would see as they don't change. Does that make sense? Okay. So in chapter 17 of Exodus, it says this, "The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?' But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, 'Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?' Then Moses cried out to the Lord, 'What am I going to do with these people? They're almost ready to stone me.' And the Lord answered Moses, 'Go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out for it for the people to drink.' So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel and he called the place Massah and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled, and because they tested the Lord, saying, 'Is the Lord among us or not?'" This is the passage about Moses striking the rock and water coming out. But I wanted to bring up, why is that happening? It's not just because they had a need that they were thirsty. They were quarreling. They were quarreling so badly that they were saying, "Why'd you take us out of Egypt?" But Egypt's not a good place. Egypt's where they were slaves. So they're actually saying to Moses, "Why'd you take us out of that place? This is worse than slavery." But it wasn't. It really wasn't. These people, God's people, had hardened their hearts. It resulted in quarreling, and they bicker. They gossip, but they stop trusting in the Lord. Will this ever, will this ever change is the question when you meet someone with a hardened heart. What would it take to change this person? And so when you're in life groups, you journey with people. And over many years, you can find that you start to think that you know this person so much that there's nothing more to know about the person. The prayers that you've been praying for the last 10 years have not been answered. So is it ever going to happen? This is what happens with a hardened heart. This is the same thing with the people. They still, despite being saved in such a miraculous way, they still weren't able to trust in the Lord. So these are the two challenges, the cultural challenge, but it's also the tiredness of people challenge. And this is because journeying with people comes at a cost. So now I want us to think about what Jesus says about doing this ministry of building life amongst God's people. And in Matthew chapter 9, verse 10 to 13, Matthew says this, "While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, 'Why did your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?' On hearing this, Jesus said, 'It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners.'" There is a cost of discipleship. There is a cost of following Jesus. Jesus himself had a cost. By doing his ministry, the work that his Father had sent him to do, to go and save the sinners, it cost him his reputation. It cost him his life. This is one of the things that got him in trouble. Him doing God's work for the sake of others ended up costing him his life. I'm in another passage. I'm in another passage, Luke chapter 14, verse 25 to 27. Luke says this, "Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple.'" There is a cost to journeying with people. If I use modern terms, it's the cost of time. I could be doing something else. My schedule is so full of all these things, I can't attend to you. Okay? There's an emotional cost. What this person is sharing with me is making me feel heavy. I can't handle the heaviness. And so I feel it, and then I live in that heaviness. So there is a human cost of us being believers in the first place that Jesus didn't shy away from. So what's his solution? Because Jesus knows this about us. In his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, verse 5, he said, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown merciful." The way I see it is that if you've got the problem of, or if God's got the problem of humans hardening their hearts over time to the point where they can't no longer sympathize with fellow humans, where they can't exercise their love for one another, his solution is in this word meek. It's humility. And what does that mean? It's the idea of lowering yourself. It's the idea of being gentle and considerate for the sake of the other person. Isn't this not what he did for us? When he came to save us, he lowered himself for our sake so we could be lifted up. He did it in his loving way, his gentle way, and he did it for us. And so this is now the life that we live out, to reflect that onto others. This is the character of the believer, the meekness, the character of the believer that Jesus says to be as his children. And so the challenge is on, First Light. The challenge is on for us to remain soft. How do we do that? We're going to be irked by people. If that's you, don't worry. The Bible knows that that's going to happen. He's planned for this. He's gone before us. What we've got to keep on doing is filling our minds with who Jesus is and what he did. But we've also got to receive that gospel again for our own sake. We also need to see ourselves as ones that he has lifted up and what he did in order for that to happen. And when you understand that incredible grace that he's done for you, you will be able to do the same unto others. Does that make sense? So church, keep looking to him. Keep looking to him as our great example of building life together. If you're contemplating taking that next step to commit to Jesus, maybe it's to believe in him. Maybe it's to take his direction. Maybe it's to take that direction to give a home group a go, a life in a group. Or maybe it's to take his direction to lower yourself for the sake of others. I encourage you to take that step. Maybe you're someone who just can't stop thinking about the cost that this would have on your life. God's not lying here. He knows that there's a cost in your life. But he's saying, remember that your Savior is the greatest sympathizer who knows that particular struggle of yours inside out. And he is trustworthy to manage that cost for you. Trust God to be your accountant. So church, I want you to walk home today and I want you to know that God is saying he wants to build your life using life groups. He wants you to know that there is a cost to building life, but that cost will always be outweighed by the cost of Jesus' life for our own. Thank you, church. God.